United Kingdom will have to accept changing European standards without itself contributing to forming those standards. And that really, for me, summarizes the absurdity of Brexit. We've ended up in a position where we're having to accept the rules evolved by others. We've given up a share in sovereignty for the pretense of a monopoly of sovereignty. And yet, when it comes down to it, we have to accept what other people have decided for us.
Hello, I'm Andrew Blick, Director of Federal Trust. I'm talking here to Brendan Donnelly, the former Director of Federal Trust. We're speaking the morning after the deal reached between the European Union and the UK announced in London, and we're talking about what the deal was, what the assessment of it is, and what the political prospects might be going forward. So, Brendan, first of all, what's your assessment of the deal reached?
I think it's very difficult to assess the deal in isolation. I'm sure you could have a PhD about the course of the negotiations in which the British got a little bit, or the EU got a little bit, or decisions were postponed. But I think it has to be set within the context. And the context is that Keir Starmer, largely for domestic political reasons, has set himself the red lines, very substantial restrictions on what he can ever foresee, supposedly agreeing with the European Union. And within those red lines, within that framework, this is more or less the sort of thing that you would expect. It's going to add very little to GDP because of 2040 having 9 billions of extra GDP. But this is all you can expect from a government that is not prepared to be radical and not prepared to envisage the really resetting elements of a future relationship with the European Union, which will be an attempt at least to join the customs union or the single market. It's not a reset, it's a tinkering.
You mentioned Keir Starmer's partially self-imposed red lines. Do you think it will be possible to go much further within the constraints imposed by those red lines, or do you think we're now reaching the limits of what can be achieved without starting to move beyond them?
I think we have reached something like the limits. There's no limit to the ingenuity of civil servants. There may well be aspects of the relationship that can be further tinkered with. But unless you're going to make a decisive leap towards reintegration, specific reintegration, I can't see much room for extra manoeuvre. After all, the role of the European Court of Justice, which is now one that will be recognised as a quid pro quo for the dynamic alignment with phytosanitary arrangements in the European Union, that has been greeted with enormous political controversy. And I don't see that that Starmer can go much further than that without facing up more brutally, more bravely than he has until now, to the real underlying questions of sovereignty sharing.
Do you think Starmer has perhaps something of a two-pronged strategy going on here? And last week, I think we saw one of the prongs with his statement about immigration and use of the word, for example, squalid, which had attracted a lot of criticism from some ends of the political spectrum. Are we this week seeing the other prong in the sense that the voters who he was hoping to appeal to, perhaps with the statement about immigration, are the ones he's hoping not to alienate with this admittedly limited progress towards reversing some of the impacts of Brexit?
That may be a thought in his mind or in the minds of his advisors, but it runs the risk of alienating everybody. Some people who will be deeply offended by his remarks about migration. On both sides of the political spectrum, by the way, the The neoliberals don't regard migration necessarily as being this terrible scourge of the British economy. They see its benefits and they encouraged its benefits. Obviously, more towards the left, the terminology and the idea that we've become a country of strangers is a very off-putting one. And those people who read the Eurosceptic press and take it seriously, are not going to buy our analysis or Starmer's analysis that this is a marginal arrangement. I need to correct myself there because, of course, Starmer is claiming it is a major reset. So it's more difficult for him then to pretend that it isn't changing very much. You can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it politically, which is something that I think that Starmer often believes you can have. You can be anti-immigration one day and in favour of integration the next day. It doesn't quite work like that politically.
And what's your assessment of the reaction of the other two main political parties in the UK at present? And in other words, Reform UK, who I think are ahead in the polls at the moment, and the Conservatives?
Well, I think there are three reasons behind the assessment. The first is that anything to do with Europe is always a trigger for anger and bitterness and resentment. And so the accusations of concessions, of caving in, of blackmail come very easily and very readily to the mouths and minds of the Conservative and Reform parties. The second reason why they're making such a fuss about it, I think, is that they want to deter Starmer from what they see as further concessions. And their calculation, probably not wrongly, is that the more they can whip up hostility to what Starmer has done, the less likely he will be to wish to go further down that path. The third reason, which is perhaps the most important psychologically, subconsciously, is that the Conservatives and many of the Reform voters know that Europe is not an issue they want to have discussed, because the more it's discussed, the more the absurdity of Brexit becomes clearer. Why are we needing this supposed reset of the arrangements if they were so good in the first place? Why is it that 55, 60% of the electorate think that Brexit has been a failure? It's true that up till now, the electorate hasn't yet drawn the conclusion that we need a new referendum, that we need to rejoin on the whole. Some have, but many haven't. But that's an unstable equilibrium. The more you talk about Brexit, the more its absurdity becomes clear. And Reform and Conservative Party would like to scare Starmer and his colleagues off talking or thinking about Europe because they're afraid that the fragility of Brexit will be further exposed. I think the question of the role of the ECJ is a very good example of that. Perhaps I can discuss that for a moment.
Yes, please do.
Part of the arrangement to facilitate phytosanitary exchanges between the United Kingdom and the European Union is what they call dynamic alignment, that the United Kingdom will have to accept changing European standards without itself contributing to forming those standards. And that really, for me, summarizes the absurdity of Brexit. We've ended up in a position where we're having to accept the rules evolved by others. We've given up a share in sovereignty for the pretense of a monopoly of sovereignty. And yet, when it comes down to it, we have to accept what other people have decided for us. Now, those decisions won't be particularly damaging or vicious necessarily, but if you're concerned about sovereignty, you had a much better chance of exercising your sovereignty as part of a shared sovereignty with the European Union rather than finding yourself on the outside having to accept the decisions made by others. It's a proof positive that you can't have your cake and eat it.
I remember that before the election, we discussed this, that it had become clear fairly early on in his leadership that Starmer had actually, having presented himself as being pro-Remain and perhaps even wanting to restore freedom of movement, tacked very hard against against all of that, and very much took on took the position that we were out, we're staying out permanently, no return to freedom of movement, no return to single market, no return to customs union. Some people from the more pro-European end of things were entertaining hopes that this was for public consumption before we got elected, and then once in power, things would be different. I think what we've seen so far has borne out what we suspected. That wasn't what was going to happen, and Starmer would, in a way, understandably, take the view that what had got him elected was what he should carry on doing, because that's what might keep him in power and even get him re-elected. Again, when the Trump episode that we've seen recently took place, and the trade war that Trump seems to declared on the whole world happened, some people thought, well, this might be a chance for a change of tack, that Starmer could say, I made these undertakings, but circumstances have changed, and now we have to look again at these red lines. And that hasn't happened. Clearly, still very much committed to the red lines, still unwilling to use even certain words that might upset people. We'd rather use experience than mobility when he's describing an agreement. The point I'm making is that so far, Starmer has, in a sense, been consistent and stuck to his word around these issues, and not moved beyond the red lines, not entertained even discussing the red lines. Can you see, while Starmer is leader, those red lines being readdressed by Labour, those red lines being reviewed and stepped over? Or do we have to wait till we have a different leader of the Labour Party? And I don't know what other party it could come from, but can you see Starmer really going back to this and changing his position?
Well, the good thing about his having changed his position so radically is that he may be able to do it again. I don't rule that out. I agree with you that if you're somebody who wants to think about rejoining the European Union in 20 years' time, possibly, then Starmer's the man for you, because it's an impossibly remote prospect that he seems to envisage, or even his courtiers seem to envisage, of ever rejoining the European Union. That's what he said, of course, on the eve of the election. He couldn't imagine rejoining the European Union within his lifetime. On the other hand, if the divisions in the world caused by Donald Trump, both political and economic, become even more acute, if it's clear that the European Union is a force of stability and strength on our borders, and our country is seen to be lagging behind economically and politically and militarily, I think there may well be pressure on Starmer towards the end of this parliament to soften his positions. That by the end of this parliament, there might have been a radical shift towards possibly a second referendum. I think the odds on that are less favourable now. But I think the direction of travel, even within the Labour Party, is to want to do more. From the pro-European side of the discussion, there's been as much criticism of Starmer for not doing more as there has been from the Eurosceptic side for saying he did too much. Now, of course, he will say that because that's criticism coming from both sides, he must have got it right. But I think that's a complacent view. And I think that from within his own party and from within his own wing of the political debate, there will be pressure on him, which eventually he may cede to.
So, do you think it's still plausible that we may never get to find out whether that £9 billion that was due to reach us by the year 2040, we may well have rejoined and not get to benefit from the deal agreed yesterday?
I think that's entirely possible, entirely possible. My worry is as you imply, that Starmer will always being concerned about a particular tranche of the electorate, which he's been told may go off to join reform unless he sings their tribal songs and reassures them that essentially he's one of them. He's not a stranger to them.
Good, and I think we can certainly conclude from all of this that whatever Starmer and others might hope, Brexit's not going away, the situation isn't stable, and things are going to keep changing. So, Brendan, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.